This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 726, brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you. And in this case, I literally mean it.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but
hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week. This is episode 726. I'm Josh Flanagan. With me is my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And there's a special treat this week. Joining us is our eccentric benefactor patron, Damian Sherman. Hey.
Hey, hello. How are you?
I'm good. Are you sad about this?
I was trying to do dramatic. Hey, hello. How are you? I was trying to do NPR. Yeah. Hello. Hello there.
I do that a lot.
Yes.
He helped support the show. His reward is he gets to come on here. We made sure he wasn't a lunatic, and then we went and brought him on.
So, yeah, in case people don't know, we had a, you know, on our patreon.com/fan, but we put in as a joke, as we did with our Goodfellas Minute podcast, an eccentric benefactor level of support. And the reward for that was you got to come on the show, and we had someone do that for Goodfellas Minute, and then we had someone do it here. Both times, we were not expecting that to happen. So, thank you.
Now, he's the commandant. I don't know and for all time. So I don't know. We don't know if we have a title for you, but we have to think of
eccentric benefactor is the
okay.
It says he should have it embroidered on a robe, a smoking jacket, like the EB.
Like the, I'm seeing the royal crown bag. They sort of purple,
yes,
gold
exactly.
Thread. Yeah, I think that's right.
EBP.
We'll have that made up.
Great, thank you.
We'll ask you some questions about yourself.
Sure.
When okay. We get to your segment that you picked out. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Well, first, sure. We'll get to the business of the show.
Yes.
Okay, so yes. Here's the explanation. It has aged a bit in the past month. We are iFanboy. We normally read our comics. We talk about them. We have fun. But as you know, nothing is normal. Nothing makes sense. Nothing matters. Well, nothing matters doesn't feel quite so true anymore. Anyway, comics are weird. There aren't new comics. So we are making this up as we go along. Good news is, we have no problem filling time. And two, we've gotten to read some other comics that we wouldn't normally. And honestly, it's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think last week's show was a great show. I'm not the 2 minute, but I got done and I was like, that was great. That felt really good. So let's do that again.
No pressure.
There will be spoilers for books that are no newer than 10 years. So I don't have a lot of guilt about that. But, you know, there's your warning. Connor, you had the pick. There will always be a pick, and this is the pick now.
Right, so a month ago, we did the Robin Year One Booksplode, and after that was over, I was very excited, and I told Josh, we should do Batgirl Year One, and you were like, I don't know if I want to do the exact same thing, and you were probably right, but when this happened, this being the pandemic and comics industry shutting down, we decided, hey, let's actually talk about Batgirl Year One, since now we have time on this regular show to do so. So Batgirl Year One is the pick of the week. Written by Scott Beatty and Chuck Dixon, art by Marcos Martín and Alvaro López, colors by Javier Rodriguez, Willie Schubert on letters. And I think it's interesting that Scott Beatty comes first this time, as opposed to in Year One where Chuck Dixon came first.
Who is Scott Beatty?
He was a guy who wrote with Chuck Dixon back in the old days. He wasn't always his co-writer, but he often wrote projects with him.
It's weird that I don't remember. Is he like the Eric Troutman to Rucka?
Right. He doesn't exist.
No. Eric exists.
Who was the other one? The one who wrote with Palmiotti?
Justin Gray.
Yeah, he doesn't exist.
Him I've never met. I've met Eric. I talk to Eric a lot, so he's a thing.
It could be a bot you're talking to.
Yeah. Justin Gray's definitely false.
This is the follow-up to Robin Year One in that it is similar formatted, although it's much longer. This was a 9-issue series as opposed to 4, and I believe this was 9 regular-sized issues, which is about the same size. It came out, I think, 2 years later, I believe. I should have wrote it down, but I didn't. It came out sometime later after the success of Robin Year One. Here we follow Barbara Gordon's first year as Batgirl, featuring the art from Marcos Martín, who did a one segment of the Robin book. Now he's doing the entire book. And I don't remember at the time I remember loving the art and loving the book, but I don't remember at the time realizing what we were getting with Marcos Martín, who would later become a big star. Now, Damien, did you read this originally when it was published? Do you remember?
No, I did not. This is my first time actually reading this, but I liked it a lot. The first thing I noticed was this color is just vibrant and pop, and reminds me of Chris Samnee's run on Daredevil and Black Widow. The you know, the same colors, right? The Javier Rodriguez did coloring for that book, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just incredible looking. That, you know, the shadows and the facial expressions and the lighting really just popped off the page. I really love this book. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the very first, if you're reading it digitally, or what we're working off of is the deluxe edition, at least Josh and I are, that we got on Comixology. The very first cover was her kicking at the viewer with Batgirl on her sole of her shoe, and it's just a terrific visual image. Yeah. One of the things that we figured out with Robin Year One was that this particular style, the Marcos Martín style, is perfect for these sort of timeless classic Batman tales.
Yeah, they're kind of retro, but also kind of not. They used to do that a lot more, where like you weren't really sure when it existed. You know, it's a little tougher now because, you know, smartphones either exist or don't. But they would, you know, this, what do we call it? Like neo-retro sort of.
Retro-modern.
Yeah, there you go.
This begins with the famous costume party, which is what Batgirl's origin was originally. She went to a costume party as a version of Batman and ends up having to stop some criminals. In this case, it's Killer Moth. I don't remember who it was in the original story. I'd have to go look. I've got it on this iPad. I would just have to look. And ends up becoming Batgirl and finding some meaning in her life. In this story, she's the version of Barbara we got in the comics at that time. She was really smart. She was really good with computers. She worked at the library and really desperately wanted to be in the GCPD with her dad, but was too small, too short, not strong enough, at least according to the people in charge. And then she tries to join the FBI. She gets the same stiff arm. And then through Batgirl, she finds meaning in her life and purpose. And that's the overall sort of story here. It's a bit more freewheeling than Robin Year One, where Robin Year One was a much tighter particular story. This is more of an overview, I think, of Barbara Gordon, because we get various aspects. We get an issue about her and Black Canary, which clearly is setting up her later in Birds of Prey. We get an issue about her and Dick Grayson's relationship. We get her training with the Justice Society, which was a lot of fun. I forgot they were in this story. So this is more of a higher view overview of Batgirl as opposed to the Robin, which was very focused on that one particular.
It's almost more like you're on the timeline of the year one.
Yeah.
Like this is a year in her world. So what was interesting to me is that I wasn't terribly excited to read this, but very quickly I was like, this is super fun. And I don't know if that's like, I don't want to read a story about a girl. I don't think that's it. I think it's, I just never really cared about Batgirl that much. Mm-hmm. Although I do like her a lot. So I don't know why that is. The format that you're talking about, actually, I don't know. I think it lent itself to sort of this longer, like I was like, well, what's going to happen next? What's, you know, and we got a lot of sort of different views of things. And it wasn't as tight and it wasn't as focused, but it was fun to see her with those other characters and stuff, and the way that her and Black Canary, it's so hard for me to not say Mockingbird and then vice versa, by the way. I thought that was a lot of fun. And I also liked, and I thought this is very, all right. So Chuck Dixon today is known as, he was always a conservative type of person, but now he's sort of, he's on the far side of what the comics industry would say is acceptable. Mm-hmm. However, there are a lot of things in this that align fairly closely with feminist thought.
Yep.
If I could say, there's a lot of like, why are people saying I can't do this because I'm a girl? Why are people treating me like this? Why? It's almost like, I don't know if it's like a libertarian take on it or whatever, but, and also it felt, and I don't know how much is Chuck Dixon, I don't know how much is Scott Beatty, but it felt very honest. It felt, you know, justified and interesting and not really anachronistic.
Mm-hmm.
I found that to be really interesting because that's a real thing. And they were talking about it, you know, a long time ago when people, you know, weren't really paying attention to this kind of having those kinds of voices and things. But I thought it worked really well, which I just found kind of interesting, you know, how we look at Chuck Dixon now.
Yeah.
He's not working anymore on Marvel DC, you know, really.
You know, this was a character he wrote in the regular series. He wrote Birds of Prey at the time, you know, and the acceptance by the male world is a part of her character. And, you know, one of the overall arcs here is not just acceptance of her finding a purpose in her life, but also being accepted by Batman and Robin as part of the team. And, you know, obviously Robin right away is interested in her joining for many reasons. But, you know, Batman's got to be won over. He doesn't want more partners. But by the end of it, she's on the team. She's in the unit.
Let me ask this. How did you look at this? So there's a bit where Robin is telling Barbara that he's doing stuff sort of without getting official approval from Batman. And then a lot of times we see in the background, you know, Batman is actually part of it and watching over it. So yeah. Was Batman orchestrating all of it, do you
yes.
think? Yes. Yeah, that's what I came out with.
Yeah. Robin's sure. not stealing all those motorcycles without Batman knowing.
Well, I don't know if he's keeping track of all his motorcycles. He's got a...
It's Alfred's job. Alfred's logistics.
You know, I also really liked how she wasn't, like, it was a really nice line of, she is really good at this stuff, but also really stupid.
Well, she's new.
You know, like,
she's new.
Yeah, no, but, you know, it's really easy to go one way or the other, which is to make her, like, completely incompetent or to make her way too competent. And, you know, by any realistic scale, she's way too competent, but it's superhero yeah. comics, so I'm fine with it. Like, I thought the rope thing was really interesting. You know, she's like, all right, here we go. And it's like, you've killed yourself.
Well, yeah.
Was there supposed to be an explanation for, like, you know, Robin was a circus gymnast. Was there supposed to be an explanation behind her acrobatic kind of superhuman abilities?
I had that question.
They showed her training, you know, before in the right. early days. She's taking judo classes. I mean, it's sort of this, the comics thing where... You yep. know, people can suddenly swing from building rooftops and not worry about it.
Okay.
You know, why is Matt yep. Murdock also really good at gymnastics? Just
sure.
Because he's Daredevil.
Desire plus some natural gifts kind of goes, all
she's,
right, fine,
she's naturally really that. Athletic, even though she's like 5 feet tall and, you know, 98 pounds or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I liked, as opposed to Robin, how this was set in the larger sort of DC world at the time. I loved where there's one scene where Dick Grayson is eating like cereal on the couch and he's wearing a Starman t-shirt. As I said before, she goes to the Justice Society headquarters to get trained, and she meets, you know, Wildcat, and she there's a whole team up with Black Canary. I like that this was sort of felt like it was in that larger world.
Mm-hmm.
And again, much like with Robin, it made me miss that early 2000s DC, which was all of this stuff that was happening. Even though this was set in the past, it felt very much of that time.
One of the character things I really liked a lot is that a lot of it's from her point of view. So you have the sort of she's fooling her dad.
Yeah.
But there are all these really subtle bits, a lot of times just in the art, like he's like, he's not stupid. He knows what's going on, or he knows that something's going on. And right. which he would. He's Jim Gordon. You know, he's very smart. And I like that. I just thought that
well,
was
he's suspecting
nice
it.
Yeah, I know, but he's not ignorant entirely. He's not like, you know.
They pull the classic Batman gambit at the end where they have Robin dress up as Batgirl to throw him off the scent.
Which is, you know, that's something about the character that's funny. He has nice legs.
He's always had nice legs. Let's talk about the villains here. So it starts off again with a sort of the same idea of Robin Yuen, in which she faces off against sort of a lame, in terms of the Pantheon villain, in terms of in Killer Moth, and she dispatches mm-hmm. him rather easily, which sends him on a sort of psychological spiral because this tiny little girl beat him up. And then he teams up with Firefly, who was a much more chilling version of the character than we'd had in the past, who is clearly an arsonist who enjoys burning women. We meet him as he's a special effects coordinator in a film set, and his explosion causes the actress to get burned, and he quite enjoys that. This was a nice dichotomy between the kind of silly villain who is really trying to punch above his weight and then the really actually legitimately scary one that they're both obsessed with getting Batgirl. And it was I thought the villains were strong, even though we didn't have like a Two-Face level villain here. We had strong C-level guys. Blockbuster makes an appearance. I thought the villains were great in this.
I didn't like the villains in this as much. I think I could get what the deal was with Killer Moth, that it was okay, but I kind of didn't quite buy it. And then I thought what was everything with the setup for Firefly was kind of interesting, but at the beginning when you get introduced him, he's like a fire tech guy on motion pictures. There's a word for it. I can't think. Demolitions, whatever, special effects person. And it seems like he's very well known and respected. And so therefore, that means he probably didn't burn a lot of people prior to that. But then on this, he does it, you know, and it's pretty clear like he's not being all that shy about it, you know, what happened. And then that's the end of his career. But like it just kind of happened instantly. I'm not saying they need to explode, but it seemed kind of odd. And then there was the thing where, like, I know that they teamed up, but I really couldn't figure out why. Like,
because they both wanted to get Batgirl.
I guess, but, like, they just didn't seem to have, go together for some reason.
Aren't Moths always drawn to a flame?
There you go.
I mean, there's your, that must have been in here, right?
I mean, you can't see the thing is like with Robin year one, they were trying to establish Two-Face as his villain, which was talked about on that show. But they couldn't, you know, who is Barbara's ultimate boogeyman? It's the Joker, but they can't do that story here.
They did allude to it at one point.
Oh, they're going to allude to it. But
I know,
like,
I know. I kind of didn't want them to, but still.
But they can't set up the Joker here. It's too. It would be too on the nose to have him be the villain. Oh.
I'm fine with that. I agree with it. If I'm going to be completely honest with you, I don't want the Killing Joke to be canon.
Well, neither did Alan Moore at the time.
No, that's like the thing I always...
Or DC.
It's one of those things like it's too terrible. Just like a lot of the story, like Identity Crisis, like that's too awful. You don't come back from any of that, really. It's just, it's a really good story. I would read the comic 1,000 times over. It's fine, but I don't know.
Well, it wasn't meant to be, but there's no reason to get into that.
And that's the deal. I mean, that's true.
Marcos Martin is wonderful. This book looks terrific. And as Damian mentioned, the colors are great in this book.
They're great.
From Javier Rodriguez. Just like Robin Year One, you know, this is a bat world that doesn't exist, and it's a bummer. This is sort of Batman, the Batman universe at its peak, this sort of feeling and this look and feel. Also, Jason Bart can go fuck himself. just go fuck off. Fuck off, Jason.
I thought this art was stronger than the Javier Bolito stuff in the other one.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a matter of inches for me. It's taste, you know.
Yes, but there was some technical things in the other one that I didn't think worked very well. This was just, you know, bang, zoom straight through it. All the, you know, the storytelling is super strong. And I mean, like at first glance, it's almost impossible to tell the difference. But I just, as I went through this, I thought it was doing a better job. Again, by inches, I think.
Marcos Martin does action that's frozen in a moment really well.
Mm-hmm, that's
that
true.
Shot very early on where she's leaping over a guy by holding onto his shoulders and her knees are bent is a terrific one-panel action shot. He's really good at that. He's always been really good at that. That's why he really excels in characters like Batgirl or Daredevil, people like who are jumping around and kicking things.
Damian, had you read the Robin Year One prior to this? Or
I actually just read it right before the show. Yeah, and I feel like I sort of agree with you that this is sort of stronger in terms of the art. I feel like just the colors pop more. I feel like the colors were sort of more muted in Robin Year One. That's just from Firefly's using his fire and using the light from that, I think helped a lot. But yeah, I think just overall, I sort of preferred this art here.
Oh, I mean, overall, really two really fun, but
yes,
like they're of a piece for sure, but they are different enough from each other. But I think that serves the characters.
Well, they're of a piece in so much that there's a volume you can get that has both two together that DC put out a couple years ago. Robin and Batgirl Year One. It's a big oversized hardcover, and it's got both editions together in one volume. They read really well as companion pieces. And honestly, you put them together with Batman Year One, you have really three really terrific Year One stories for the Batman world that read really well. They feel similar. We talked about this with Robin Year One, how the look and feel, the design of the characters feels very much like Mazzucchelli influences. It all feels of a piece, even if they were made years and years apart. Bruce Wayne has that look here too, with the heavy eyebrows and the widow's peak hair. So there's clearly that feeling they're carrying across these three volumes. But these three together, you know, when I was growing up reading Bronze Age comics, these were the three. You know, it was Batman, Dick Grayson, and Barbara Gordon were a team. So this felt very much like going home for me, which was nice.
Yep.
Although Jason Bard was never around. Jerk. Also, real quick, great sketch material in the back of this collection. So if you if you want to see Marcos Martín sort of work out his character designs, God, he's good.
I think one of the things that's really impressive about that sketch work is just how good it was from the beginning. Like, there was just like, oh no, you had it. It came out of your head pretty well formed. You know, there's development in it, but it's still just crazy. It's just like you just start drawing. And, oh, there it is. There's your art. Like, there's not.
He's very good, guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that, but Marcos Martín's incredibly good.
I don't want him to get too full of, he's okay. I'm going to neg him.
That was Batgirl Year One, the pick of the week. And who knows what next week will bring. It's just exciting and terrifying about this whole process.
Whee!
So we weren't going to talk about any comics, but then Teen Titans Go to Camp number 7 came out. We talked about 6 last week, and why not?
And you read all of them.
So I figured, what the hell, I downloaded all the issues and read them all. There was 2 things I liked about the story. The recurring joke about, which you mentioned, about Robin being feeling inferior to Speedy. And then I also, for some reason, like Mr. Miracle constantly popping up and saying, who wants to watch me escape from something? And then he just disappears again. I don't know why he keeps doing that, but it's funny.
Now, I mean, I loved the movie that came out, and you saw it, and you hated it.
I hated it, yeah.
Can you explain that to me a little
not
bit?
Not really. it's just not a style of humor I find funny.
Okay.
I just don't. And so that was part of reading this was, for the most part, it's like, yeah, I mean, this is not really. I found myself looking forward to the in-between issues like we talked about last week with the with the strange art. Not strange, but the unusual art. This issue was drawn as it was the cartoon style.
I think the comics lose a lot of the transition. Like, I think they're all the characters are done exactly in the voice. You know, I think Charlie Fish writes for the actual show also, but you know, I think the voice acting is a lot of it, and sort of the movement of it. And
that's what happens with a lot of licensed stuff. And this is not.
Yeah, it's weird though, because it's licensed from comics and back and forth. Like, it works, but it does.
But I feel like the specific thing about the cartoon, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, because you watch it with your kids, is that it's so, like, sort of fast paced and high strung.
Very. Extremely.
And so you don't really get that on the page. When the reader controls the pacing, it's not really the same thing doesn't really happen. I mean, you can read it that way, but it's just not the same without the pacing created by the showrunner. You know, I think if you like the cartoon, you like this. So clearly Granny Goodness has a plot here. She's trying. She sees in Robin a recruit for her, what is it? Darkseid's Dog Cavalry.
Right. Okay. I was going to say the Furies. I was like, no, those are ladies. I think one of the things that's funny about it is I like that there is an underlying, like, it's set up with the DC universe. And so there's the jokes for the kids and everything. And then there is just this line of like, oh, nobody's going to get that except for nerds, like deep DC nerds. And there was a lot of that in the Teen Titans Go movie, I thought, which I thought was funny.
I mean, the idea that they are at camp on Apocalypse is inherently funny. And it's kind of funny that there's no problem with that. Like, they're just on Apocalypse going to camp.
Yes.
That's the line that these kind of books and Franco and Balthazar's books run, where it's like, it's silly. Like, if there's a camp on Apocalypse, they can go to it, even though it's their mortal enemies. Why not? So that's fun.
And I do think that's sort of what's fun about a lot of these, for sure. You know what else is silly? Old men discussing these children's comics for this long.
Damon, do you have thoughts on this book?
It is very silly. Well, the comic itself is silly. I think this passed me by. I was a little bit too old for the cartoon.
Well, to be fair, so was Josh.
For the cartoon.
Yes.
It just happened.
It's fun.
Like, I was with my 8-year-old, and it was on one day, and I was like, "Oh, I've heard of this," and I was watching. Oh, it's funny.
yeah. No, I had a good time with this. This was very fun.
I mean, I didn't dislike it, although I did easily skip all the parts where Cyborg stings.
I mean, like the thing is that, like, the Franco and Art Balthazar ones, like, those are tougher. Like, those are just clearly just for little kids for the most part.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all.
Well,
I think those are all ages books.
Well, I've read all of them, so that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. And I don't know if we're going to keep talking about it or not. Next week, Batman comes out again. We'll probably talk about that, but I don't know if we're going
to. I don't know that there's a point. I'll read it. I'm going to read it. And then I'll let you know.
If something major happens in the book going forward, but there's really nothing to talk about with this.
I mean, it's going to just be like, Bill Sienkiewicz drew this one.
Sure. Which maybe will happen in one of those in-between issues.
You never know.
So let's move on to the patron pick. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can go. And if you're a patron, vote to add a book to the rundown if books were coming out. Instead, we have Damien on the show, who is a patron, and we asked him, Damien, what do you want to talk about on the show? And he told us what he wanted to talk about, and therefore it made it the patron pick by default.
Also, don't think that this is going to go to the rest of you. You do not get to pick a graphic novel out for us each week. Sorry.
Damien, before we get to the pick, let's talk about you. How are you? Are you all right? Is everything okay?
I mean, that's a loaded question these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's safe and good and...
Yes. No, I'm good. I'm good. Working many hours. A manufacturer of water. People need water these days, I've heard.
Wait,
so,
you can make water?
A bottle of water.
Did we give you that patron power?
Yeah, no.
Can make water.
Yep.
He figured out fusion.
No, I am. I'm hanging in there. I'm very, very lucky, you know, in terms of having a job right now. So I'm just counting my blessings is what I'm doing.
I keep having that same thought over and over. Every time I'm like, and then I'm like, wait a minute, could be worse. Yeah. Like, good, we're in the house.
Let's talk about your fandom history. So tell us, you know, when you started reading comics, what some of your favorite books have been. Like, what is your comic book reading history?
It's not a lot, actually. I was went to my first comic book store probably when I was like 9 or 10. So this is gonna age me a little bit, but it was around.
You're 65 now.
I'm 65 years old, exactly. So I was like 15, 16 around 2000. So it's not a great time for Superman. It's not, you know, I wasn't really reading Batman. So I actually got into a little bit into Spawn. Mm-hmm. I got into those big books of death, those graphic novels, big book of death, big book of urban legends, things like that. Then I sort of dropped off, came back with the New 52. I was reading those for a while, sort of dropped off there. Then just reading graphic novel once in a while here and there. So I'm definitely not a weekly guy. But if there's like I'm just looking at my trades here, it's a lot of like Daredevil runs, like I said, of Chris Samnee's run, Lock and Key. I read Preacher because Josh recommended it, so I went through all of that.
How'd that go?
It's very good. Not saying.
I was hoping you were going to take it to Josh, but.
I was like, all right, here we go.
Hot take, Preacher is very good.
Can I ask you, like, when you first went into that comic shop when you were a teenager,
yes.
What made you go in there? Why did you want to check that out? And what made you sort of pick what you picked?
So I don't know exactly what drew me in there at first. I didn't really know what I'm looking for at all, really. The stuff that was just on the guy's shelf as far as the single issues, in the bag and boards, he had like a Spawn 1 through 100. So it was like, $500 or whatever that at that point. So I saved all my money and picked those out.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You bought Spawn 1 through 100? That's true.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So, yeah. So
I'm so sorry.
Are you still reading them?
I
there's so many dialogue balloons.
Yeah, no, I just dropped off a while ago.
Basically, but you got to remember, like issues 35 through 80 were mostly just Cape.
Yes, yes.
And I'm not gonna knock. When Spawn first came out, I was an enthusiastic Spawn reader. So you're like a trades guy. You will read stuff that you hear is good. You will read classic runs or things, but you're not a guy who goes every Wednesday morning and gets comics.
No, I was for a while. I have a few long boxes here, but I just sort of I come and go. Really, I see like Sheriff of Babylon. I got those trades when something when I find a writer like Tom King, I would seek out all of his stuff. So I'll find a writer, and then I'll go back in through their catalog and sort of collect their stuff. So that's what I've been doing for the past few years.
You're like a new wave comic fan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
That's great. So. How did you decide upon Day Tripper as your patron pick, which is a graphic novel collection of the 10-issue series from Vertigo, written and drawn by Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba, with colors by Dave Stewart, I'd forgotten about. How did you decide on that?
This book just blew me away when I first read it, when it first came out. And quick, funny story, I bought the book when it came out, and then when I subscribed to the Patreon, to you guys' Patreon, you sent out books to people that subscribe, right? And then, the book that you sent me was Day Tripper, which was
awesome.
Yeah, right. But it's a good thing because I can loan out the paperback and keep my hardcover.
That's awesome.
Safe and sound. Yeah.
This is a series that came out in 2010.
Yep.
In case people haven't read it, the collection came out a year later. If you're someone who's a big fan, the Absolute Edition apparently is coming out this month.
Yeah, oh, nice.
It's been solicited for like a year.
Yeah.
And pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. But they claim it's coming out at the end of this month, so we'll find out if that actually happens, which would be great.
Yeah, it's like saying the schools are going to reopen.
Yeah, I mean, the soft cover I have is not the best quality.
It's that thing, I want to say near the end of Vertigo as sort of a real ongoing concern, like years before they actually shut it down, all their trades got newspaper, you know, like newsprint, uncoated, thin paper, cheap, which has a certain aesthetic for sure. But actually, you just read the Preacher books and it drove me crazy because the last book is on this newsprint stuff. And I was like, really? Yeah. Really? 9 fucking books and the last one you're cheaping out on?
Yeah.
However, I will say that, like, I know what you're saying, Connor, but it did lend a quality to this that I really liked. And I know it's not sort of the most archival source or something, but if you started reading comics in, you know, around 2000, Damien, you're probably not as familiar with it. But this is what all comics used to be.
Mm.
And so, you know, we're so used to the fancy, shiny paper now, but this is, you know, this makes me feel like I'm reading something almost timeless more so. Anyway.
Yeah, so this is just, you know, kind of set it up, but it's vignettes of a man's life through each chapter. It's each chapters of the man's life when he's, you know, in his 30s, when he's a kid, as he grows up. This really hit me hard. There's his friend, Jorge Dos Santos. It is incredibly, it's stunning, the similarities between a friend I had in high school. The just the look, the name, everything that went on in his life as far as having mental health issues and things like that. It is stunningly similar to what my friend went through. So that's something that's always stuck with me book.
This must feel like a very personal work for you.
Yeah, it is.
One more thing before we get into it. How did you first come across the book?
You sent it to him.
No, he already had it.
I had it first. I think it was one of those things. I think maybe Jeff Cannata on the Totally Red show recommended it back then. Mm-hmm. So I picked it up because of, on his recommendation.
This is a very Jeff Cannata book.
It is. It is. It really is.
Josh, I went back and looked, and so somehow of the 10 issues, only 2 were picks of the week.
Mm.
I think that might be true, but I'm guessing that by the end, we were like, because it wasn't a trade, so I don't think it would have been like book of the month or book of the year or something. But
I thought for some reason it would have, but it didn't get. Well, I didn't look at the right year. Maybe it never got book of the year, which is strange.
No, I don't think it was, but.
Mm.
If we were still doing that, The Absolute came out and it's beautiful and it's got tons of stuff in it. It would probably be a book of the year for sure. Or book of the month at least. Anyway, the point is, it was twice pick of the week. It probably could have been more, but I'm sure it was one of those situations where we were like, what else do we have to say about this?
Yeah, which issues do you know?
1 and 8, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'll just say, so how Josh and I and Ron back then came across Day Tripper, I mean, we would have read it anyway, but... You know, back then when iFanboy was like a going concern, a machine, we had a very strong relationship with the VP of publicity at DC, who would occasionally call, you know, bring us into the office to chat or whatever. And obviously, as VP of publicity, he was trying to get us to talk about stuff that he was chatting to us about.
We're still friends with him.
Yeah, no, I'm saying he was doing his job really well.
Yeah.
We went there one time and he said, oh, there's a book we're coming out with soon. I don't know what you guys think. He gave us 2 photocopy black and white of the first 2 issues.
I remember that now.
Yeah, so we had a bit of a head start on the rest of the world because in the first issue, as Damien said, it opens with the main character, Brass. Is it Brass? Is that how you say his name?
I've been wondering it the whole time. I'm sort of... Portuguese is weird.
He's a young newspaper columnist. He writes the obituary section. His dad's a famous writer. He's going to a gala show that's going to honor his father, and then he goes to buy cigarettes at a bar near the venue, and there's a robbery and he gets shot and killed, and that's how the issue ends. And the thing is, because we had the first 2 issues, we knew the gag. We knew that in the second issue Braz is back and he dies again, this time as a younger man. And so we had a bit of a head start into the conceit of the book. That's how we got introduced to Day Tripper, was through these black and white previews that DC gave us. You know, Fabian Moon and Gabriel Ba are immense talents.
Yes.
They had done Umbrella Academy before this.
Yeah, I think so. Right?
Because we knew them by now.
First of all, thanks for making me read a book about death over and over again during this very stressful time. That was I was like, oh man, this is real heavy for right now. But it's such a good comic. And one thing I was struck by when I got to the end, especially the final chapter, which is just, you know, beautiful, is how much insight into humanity these two guys have, who are relatively young. I mean, especially at the time.
They were 32, 33 when it came out, which means they were much younger when it started. I had the exact same thought. I was like, Jesus, how do you have a perspective of an 80-year-old man?
Or just, just woman. Such an insight into humanity and life and what it means to go through this. And one of the things I want to talk about is what we think it all means, because as Damien said, and we just is each chapter is a chapter of Bras's life and that he dies at the end of. And it's sometimes he dies at 38, sometimes he dies at 28, sometimes he dies at 72, and sometimes he dies at 45. Like it's a different point of his life. And yet the story of the life sort of continues. So like in one issue, he dies the day his wife gives birth to their son. And in the next chapter, he's a little bit older. They had the son, but he's still alive and he dies later. And so it's like the life around him sort of continues as he pops in and out. And it's not a story about him reincarnating. It's just he's always been alive and he dies again. It's very metaphysical.
You're right. The story does continue going.
Like, the things that happen in those stories happen in other stories, too. Like, his father dying happens.
Well, yeah, and he meets the girl, you know, in the bakery, and that becomes his wife after he breaks up with the first girl who he met, you know, on vacation with Jorge. And, like, that continuity is the same for all of them. And I think that one of the things that makes that interesting is that you would think that, based on the premise of this, that the characterization might not be as strong. But, in fact, because of having to watch all the characters go through these traumas, you really do get to know them extremely well, if not better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess you don't watch because he dies at the end of the issues. But either way, you know, there's stress that sort of leads up to all those things. And as a character piece, it's incredibly strong, I think. Not just Bras, but his mother and his father and, you know, then later his son and his wife and his, you know, and Jorge, for example. Yeah, it's a hell of a thing.
Yeah, I read this every year, and I finally sort of found something where I could maybe find a common theme, a common thread running throughout all of the chapters, and I think it's finding balance in life, because if you notice, whenever he dies, the first time when he dies after meeting the girl, and he sort of puts his life on hold to pursue the girl, then he dies there. He puts his life on hold to pursue his friend who's gone missing. He puts his life on hold. One of the chapters that hits me the hardest, it always is when he's not in the chapter at all. Right, he's on a work trip and he dies. Yep. So you can say he's putting his career first there. Almost every time he's pursuing one aspect of his life over another. So I really think that is a theme that they're exploring here, is you have to have balance in all of your areas of your life, or you're not going to find contentment or happiness or whatever.
That is a great observation.
I think you're absolutely there. And yeah. No, and that is a thing I was thinking about the whole time, because this really is the if you read anything, it's hard to not see yourself in it. But there's a lot of stuff that was going on here that I can 1,000% relate to. And it's like, well, there's your work, and then there's your kids, and then there's what you wanted to be as opposed to the job you have. There's your wife. There's your loves. Did I miss something in life? Should I be out there? Should I go more like Jorge? These are all thoughts that I have concretely had in my life. And you make choices, and then you look, oh, I'm middle aged. And I'm doing, you know. And it's very poignant in that way. And again, when I was saying earlier, like, they were young to have that kind of perspective, but, you know, you're talking about human nature. I'm talking about just literally these thoughts that go through a person's mind as they age, as they go throughout their lives. I thought, you know, I'm 10 years older now, and it had a whole different effect on me than it had the first time. So just because I'm getting to it, thank you so much for making me read this again. I'm not kidding.
No,
I finished it, and I was like, holy shit. I'm going to tell you, there was twice I was reading it. I think it was like late Wednesday night, and it was about 12:30, maybe 1 a.m. And I was like, I should probably read some of this, but I'll just read the first one to get started. And I read like 6 issues.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, I can keep my eyes open, but I couldn't put it down. And I forgot, you know, I haven't had that feeling in a really long time, to be honest.
Yeah.
I tried to space it out on purpose because
this
was a much like, I forgot the other book we always talk about that was very issue focused, where like each issue is basically its own story, even though there's an overarching sort of thing happening in the background. So the time between issues was sort of part of the storytelling, I think, because
I think you're not wrong in its construction, but I think for me, it was all a piece, and it seemed like it was different chapters, but it wasn't. So by reading them all together, I felt like I got more out of it last time than I did the last time, because I was seeing threads that connected that I probably hadn't noticed before.
Sure. And I'm talking about waiting, 12 hours between chapters, not 30 days, but it's almost like you want to stop and think about what you just read for a little while.
Yes.
And before you move on to the next bit, these guys have become sort of I don't say indie darlings because it's not even enough for what they are. But they're at the point now when they put a book out, it's an event.
Yeah.
They work rarely. Book? They work outside of, quote unquote, outside the system. You know, they don't do a lot of mainstream stuff. They occasionally do some stuff with Image with people they like. But for the most part, they just sort of do their own projects. And every year at Comic-Con, when Comic-Con was still a thing, you know, you go for 10 years. I stopped going to panels because they're mostly annoying. But every year I would go to their panel, which they usually did on Sunday, in which they just talked about art, like what art inspired them, what they like. It was very moving, and I'd always find books to read coming out of it. I always go back to the floor and go over to like Top Shelf or somebody and buy a bunch of books that they talked about, because they think and feel very deeply about comics as a medium that's more than just Batman, and which I love as well, but they're a very different kind of comic book makers, and they're very valuable to the industry in that way.
I mean, in terms of art, there's nothing like this, I don't think. I feel sort of European, but they're Brazilian or whatever.
Yeah.
But characterization's really great in the sense that, like, Braz, you see him all throughout his life, and you can always tell it's him. It's the same guy. Their ability to sort of move those characters along, or his wife, same thing from the time you meet her. And let's not they draw beautiful women. And I don't mean like sexy, crazy women, although the first one is or whatever, but like when he meets he sees the girl across in the bakery, and he's like, there was just something about her hair. And I was like, you're right, there is something about her hair. And as she got older, like that was always there, even though parts of it were longer, but you could always recognize the thing. And like, and I mean, I think it works the same with men. Like they draw beautiful people, and not just like, not to say like sexy, like Greg Land, beautiful people.
Right.
Just interesting and beautiful looking humans. And I know that sounds super wishy-washy, but that really is a thing. And then there was a couple of pages where the storytelling was beyond amazing. Like there's one, and I think it's when they're on vacation, Jorge and Braz are sitting on the beach, and I couldn't find it in here if I wanted to. And it's nighttime, the moon's up, and the panel just sort of swoops from upper left to sort of slow, lower right, and everything that they're looking at is in line. And I thought, that is
page 50. Like,
yeah, master level shit. I'm not even exaggerating. I just thought, that is everything that a comic book page and panel is supposed to do. And it was so smooth and effortless and flowing, you know. And it's the opposite of when I, you know, people know when I bitch about left-hand panel stacking or something like that, or confused. Like, this was just flawless and sublime. Now, second part of my story. Yesterday, I was catching up the middle of the day. My 6-year-old son was sitting across from me on the couch, and he's watching, you know, some bullshit. And I'm reading, and I got to the issue about Jorge when he goes back. Mm-hmm. I didn't get choked up. I started crying. Yeah. Like, and granted, there's a lot of shit going on. So I'm not, you know, it's not bully them, but like, and he looks over at me, and I'm like, I'm okay. This story is just very, very, you know, and he's like, whatever. And then it happened again. I think maybe the last issue, not the dream issue. Everything other than the dream issue, which was fine. But it was another bit. It might have been like with his dad and the stuff. And I cannot remember the last time a comic book did that. I've gotten choked up. I've done like whatever. But I was like weeping. And I was like, holy shit. So like it's finished, and I showed my wife the book. I'm like, you need to read this. And she's like, what? Yes. And I go, I'm not, I haven't said this to you in forever, but man, like it gave me many feelings. I was like, why do I not think this is the best book ever?
What comes out of this is the reiteration that this is one of the best books that's been made in the modern era.
Oh yeah.
For sure. If we ever did that kind of ranking where, What are the best books in the time we've been doing the show since 2005, or iFanboy since 2000? This is on the list, for sure.
I mean, one of the things is, in the normal churn of events, we are going through books, you know, left and right, and we can look back and go, oh, that was pretty good. We don't often go back and read things again. And the things that you love, or the things that you kind of even forget about, when you do and they're really good, like, they get better. I mean, Watchmen works like that, or Preacher for me, you know, like this is, you know, I went back and read it, and I was like, I can't believe I remembered it was good, but I didn't remember that it was that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, look, what Josh said, thanks for doing this, because I haven't read this in a while.
Yeah.
We're big fans of their work in this house.
Where's the next thing? I looked, I was like, well, what have they done since then? Nothing.
Right. No, they did. Two Brothers came out last year, the year before. They've been doing work.
They did that
Neil Gaiman book. Yeah.
Yeah, How to Talk to Girls at Parties, right?
Yeah, that one. They do OGNs, basically. They come out every few years.
Yeah.
Well, I need more.
they're incredible artists, and this is an incredible book. So, yeah. Day Tripper.
I like that you don't know who does what.
I just forget who is who, but there's definitely, you know, there's the more cartoony style guy. He does the Umbrella Academy stuff. His work is sort of towards the end with the kid, that chapter, with the flood and the dream. That's all the other guy.
Oh, okay.
But they're very similar. They're very similar.
Yeah.
So that's Day Tripper. That's the patron pick.
Ratings.
I assume we're all going to give 5 stars out of 5.
Yeah, 5. Yep, absolutely.
Sticking with it.
No, because I was like, oh, there's an absolute. I should probably get that. I haven't bought an absolute in a decade.
Yeah, I think that's one to get. Sure. I mean, think about it. So there you go. Thanks, Damien. That was a really terrific pick.
Yeah.
And you're welcome. We wouldn't have read it.
The best part was Connor's like, "Do you have it?" And I was like, "I don't know." And I looked, and I did, and I was very excited.
I know we had the issues. I just remember, I mean, those were long gone. All right, so as we talked about, patreon.com/iFanboy, that's where you can go and you can vote to add a book to the rundown. Although I don't know that we're going to keep doing that for the foreseeable future because there are no real books to add to the rundown.
Figure out a way to do it. We will.
If you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show. Damien, what power did we give you?
You gave me the ability to be in 2 places at once.
Oh, man. Wow. That's a good one. That's a really good one.
Yeah, pretty good.
So let's thank this week's patrons, Josh.
And the first up this week is Peter Craig, who has 2 first names. Peter. Hey, so does Damian Sherman. Peter has the ability to instantly eyeball and count the number of things that he's looking at. So if that jelly bar, that like big jar of jelly beans.
He's Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man.
Yeah, he wins it every time.
Yeah.
Oh, is that a thing? I've never seen that movie.
Autism.
I've seen that movie.
You've never seen Rain Man?
No. No, it wouldn't have been something I'd have wanted to watch.
Interesting. You won like 5 Oscars.
I maybe have once since then, but you know, it wasn't a thing. Yeah, but he can count things. How many cars on this lot? 48. How many holes are left in this pegboard?
Is he counting them or does he just know the answer?
He's counting them, but at such a rapid rate, he doesn't even recognize that he's counting them. He just sees the number. It's there.
Can he count grains of sand?
Ooh,
it's a good point. I mean, there must be a limit.
Ask me something visually he can see. Like, he can't see all the grains of sand, but he can see all the cars in the lot.
Yeah. Yes, you have to visualize it in the single. Okay. So, like, grains of sand on a beach, you'd have to be, like, between here and here. Like,
but he could pick them up in his hand and say, how many grains of sand am I holding?
Sure. And also, like, so if you got the jelly bean thing, you can't necessarily see all the jelly beans, but you do know how much volume is in there and the things. He can figure that stuff out.
I see.
Also.
Alex Davis is always warm.
Go on.
It just never gets cold. You know?
But he's not like he doesn't always have a fever.
No, he doesn't get cold. I mean, he's not radiating heat. He's not like a furnace. He's just, he doesn't get cold.
My 10-year-old's like that.
He doesn't need to be wearing like 3 layers of clothing in the.
Actually, most men in New Hampshire are like that. What, 35 out? Shorts and flip flops. I saw a guy today, it was 40, and there was a dude outside in shorts and a t-shirt, and he looked like he really regretted it, and it made me so happy.
Well, if you recall, Josh, in college, in the very cold area we went to college, and if it was 50 degrees, people were out in shorts and, you know, sunbathing.
They didn't really appreciate the ability to wear a sweater and pants, because you can't wear a nice boot if you're wearing athletic shorts. I mean, you can't.
No, but I went out, I recall, I was one of those college guys who, you know, went out in regular shorts, my snow boots when it was snowing.
Well, we make mistakes when we're young.
Sure. I also, much like Alex Davis, I was always warm and healthy and nothing hurt. Anyway, enough about being 18. So Alex Davis is always warm. He never gets cold. He's always just very comfortable and warm. Not hot, not cold, just warm.
Can I insert my idea for my new segment here?
Sure.
This new segment is called What Hurts?
A lot of things.
So Connor, you just need to pick something. We'll come back to it next week. I'll put this randomly in the show. Connor, what hurts?
Right now?
Yeah.
I've been getting weird pain inside of my knee.
I'm not laughing at your pain. I just know that this will be different every week, and I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Inside of the knee, so like on stairs and such?
I feel like it's... No, just... I think I probably strained my meniscus.
Ooh, you don't want that.
No.
But the bone on the outside of your foot, I don't remember which one, like the big long one that goes from the ankle forward on my right foot has been sore. for weeks. I have no idea why. And I want it to stop. Not horrible. Like, I can get on with it, but I'll stand up and go, ow. Okay. I'll just deal with it. Hey, Damien, what hurts?
Yes. Well, geez, I worked 80 hours this week, so everything.
That, I'm sorry, but this segment does not work in that way.
Pick one.
Pick one.
A blister on my big toe.
Ooh. Ow. Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, at least you know that one has an end.
Yeah.
There's a way to make that stop.
Yeah. There's other ones. Because sometimes what hurts, the answer is, and it's probably never going away. This is just right. How it is now. Right. All right. So sorry, I interrupted that.
So now Damien has requested to turn the tables. Damien, take it away.
Yeah. So I have one power for you, one of you, which is useful now. One power is going to be useful, let's say, 6 months, a year from now. Connor, yeah. Anytime you sit down to watch Netflix, Hulu, or whatever comes on, you in your heart, in your heart's heart, in your subconscious, is what you wanted to watch.
Whoa.
Wow.
You don't have to flip through. Browse anything. It's just there.
I was hoping you were going to say that whenever I sit down to watch those things, my password works.
Connor, write that down.
That's also good.
This is AOE. Like this is area thing. Effect. Okay. This is area effect. So anybody in the room, you turn on Netflix, whatever comes on, everybody agrees. That's great. Yes, we'll watch that.
That's a marriage saver right there.
Yes, it is. Josh, so when we were allowed to go out again and exchange goods for services with actual people. If somebody at a Walmart, let's say, asked you for, sir, can I have your phone number? Can I have your email? Would you like to sign up for this? If you say no to this Walmart person, every other Walmart remembers that. It's like a little check mark that you just did. Every other Walmart will never ask you for your information ever again.
I just, relief just washed over me. Let me ask you this. What about for does it go with websites?
Yes.
Like, what about phone calls?
Phone calls, yep, whatever company they work for.
That's great, because there's this guy who used to have my phone number, and every six months or so, they call Brian looking for his money. Brian Newcomb, will you just fucking pay these people? One of these times, I want to ask what it is he owes, like, because if it's like $50, I'd pay.
Yeah,
I might just pay to make it stop. All right, well, thank you, Damien. Those are good powers.
I was thinking about that for about a month, so. Oh,
well, that's all right.
Well, we don't always get as much time as we want.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go sign up at the $5 or higher level. You can get your own patron powers. And even though the script says Damien's going to do the ad read, it's not Damien, it's Josh.
That makes more sense.
Yes.
Get over to patreon.com/iFanboy. Big news, guys. This is not even on the heels of the eccentric benefactor. We have hit our next stretch goal.
Yes.
On the dot.
Damien returned to his normal level. And we still hit the stretch goal. We had a lot of new patrons in the last couple of weeks. We thank you. I don't know if it's because everyone's home and need entertainment, but we've been shocked and humbled and a little appalled.
I'm not.
So thanks. As Josh said, we're on the knife's edge. We're exactly at the stretch goal. So somebody drops out. We're no longer at the stretch goal. Get a couple more patrons. Get comfortably above the stretch goal.
As of now, we are proceeding apace with the promises that we've made for that. So that means a regular monthly all-media show, which we will have to schedule in addition to the other regular shows that we forget to schedule. We will get on that. And then we will begin uploading our vast archive of video shows.
A few at a time, because it takes a while.
At a comfortable rate. Yeah. I think we have to be realistic about that. But it will proceed apace for sure. And again, I said this last week, but I can't reiterate it enough. Thank you, everybody. I mean, like, you're helping probably more than you know.
Yeah.
Especially now, because everything is so unsure and weird. It is it makes a real difference to our lives. You know, we love doing this, and I can't tell you we would stop for anything in the world. But you're really making it so we can't stop, and that's good for all of us, I think. I think you can go over to our Threadless store at ifanboy.threadless.com, and you will find
eight
designs. We did, in fact, add that mysterious eighth design. We would like you to stay home and read comics. That's all. We would like you to do that. And then a little thing about that eighth design, a portion of all those sales are going to go to comic stores in need. We haven't quite worked that out because there is no sort of central factor for that. But we already know, you know, several stores that we like.
There's no general fund, but we're going to figure it out.
There's no heroes initiative.
Yeah, once we get the sales in, we'll figure it out. It's already our second most popular design. That's just in about a week. So thank you for that.
Well, what's great about that is that it was like a 24-hour thing. Like for, I'm going to say a year and a half, we've been like, we're going to have another one up there. And then we were like this. We're like, yes, put it up. And it was going really soon. So thanks to everybody who picked that stuff up. You can buy other, not just shirts, other items. There's a mug, there's magnets, there's stuff like that to get for those things. And all the other shirts are still there. Again, nothing makes sense, nothing matters. As true now as it ever was. We don't ever stop thinking about it for sure, but we don't want to put anything out just because we want to put something out. We want it to be good. And then over at Threadless, also all of the merch is on sale until April 15th. So that you got a little time there.
Yeah, so yeah, if you're thinking about picking anything up, this is the time to do it. Everything is on sale for the next couple of days, so get on it.
If you don't want to deal with any of that rigmarole, and you know, I'm not holding it against anybody who does. Everybody who does, great. If you can't, that's fine. You're all welcome, whatever. But if you just want to go over to ifanboy.com/support, there's a button for a direct donation through PayPal one time.
Which someone just did recently, and I don't want to make you feel bad, Damien, but they were almost at the eccentric benefactor level, and it was shocking.
Wow.
Yeah, well, like we had to check it. Like, is this right? So, you know, geez.
I mean, do appreciate it.
Honor said humbling, and it's like, that's beautiful. And then finally, if you've got a few weeks to wait, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. I'm kidding. Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and you will find links to buy all the books that we just talked about. You will find a link for the book that we just spoke about now, for example, on the post for this, both of them, actually, and a general link to Amazon there if you're buying supplies, if you think you can get toilet paper through them. I found some there.
My local liquor store has tons of toilet paper.
No shit.
I found that out the other day when I went to go buy vodka. I was like, oh, shit. You guys got toilet paper.
Did you like buy one, like one tiny thing of vodka
no,
and then?
No, because I mean, I was, you know, I bought a lot of toilet paper back in the early days of this, so I'm good. But yeah. Like, I was like, oh, shit. So if there's a problem, I know where to go.
Dry goods.
Yeah. Well, I just bought a bottle of vodka.
So that's that. Again, thank you, everyone, for being a part of that. Thank you, Damien, for sure.
Yes.
Let's move along to our new corner, G.I. Joe Corner.
G.I. Joe Corner. Now, Damien, we gave you the info on this.
Yep.
I assume you watched this episode?
I did watch this episode.
Did you watch the previous episode?
I did not.
Well, that's okay. It gave you a helpful little recap.
You have any experience with G.I. Joe? Because you're a little younger, so maybe that wasn't a thing for you. Are you familiar with it?
No. Not really. I'm familiar with the memes and the viral videos that the PSAs that they spoofed in the mid-2000s. I don't know if you're aware of memes, Josh. I don't know what you know what memes are.
Oh, I see. We're at that point of the show. Yeah. let me ask you this then.
Yes.
So
sure.
What we find is that when we talk about it on the show, we are under the impression that people really like it when we talk about it. But then there's a person like yourself who doesn't know what the hell we're talking about. So are you normally, do you skip that part?
No, I roll through all of it. I'm vastly interested in this vintage cartoon called G.I. Joe.
Okay. You don't have to say that. You don't need to. All right, Connor,
I'm just saying. Yeah, just saying. X-Men of the '90s was, you know, that's what I grew up with. So
yeah, so he's of that age where people slightly younger than us were super into X-Men, which we were not.
Yeah,
because it was a bad cartoon. Anyway, G.I. Joe, a real American hero. it was a little poke at everybody. It was a little younger than me because their knees don't hurt. This episode is called "Slave of the Cobra Master: The Mass Device Part 2, which originally aired September 13th, 1983, the day after last week's episode, because these aired Monday through Friday. And again, directed by Dan Thompson, written by Ron Friedman, who also produced it with Marvel Productions, because again, Marvel was hired to create the story of the toys, and that's how you got the cartoon and the comics. So with part two, Duke has been kidnapped. At the end of the last episode, he went to grab the Baroness from escaping, and he ended up being transported to Cobra's headquarters, where he was put to the slave pits to fight for the amusement of Cobra's many, many soldiers. That's how it ended. That was a cliffhanger. And so here we have Duke's a thrilling escape from Cobra, while the Joes go to form their own mass device. So they send the first mission out into the Arctic to find the rare mineral, radioactive mineral they need to run the mass device. And that's basically what happens in this episode. Josh, thoughts?
A lot happened, but it moved very slowly and was over quickly.
Interesting.
The first thing I picture is the very clunky cave robot battle. And I just thought, I remember that toy. That was not a good toy.
Those robots functioned like every device I own. It's a good idea and looks good, but when they actually have to do what they're supposed to do, they don't actually quite do what you want them to do.
Yeah.
They're just not quite there.
not a real threat
yeah.
to the Joes, as far as I could tell. Things I enjoyed, Snowjob has an A-plus accent. Straight out of Dorchester.
He's from Vermont, the character, so I don't know where they were going with the accent, but...
Then he must have been born there and spent some time in Southie and then moved back up because, I mean...
Well, as we know, the cartoon accents didn't match up the character bios. Destro does not speak in a Scottish accent. Yeah, that's where he was from.
And I'm like, he should be the hero of everything, Snowjob. He's good looking. He's got a big, manly red beard. You know, he's hanging out with Scarlet. You know, I think that accent cost him a lot of, you know, probably advancement in the military. And then finally, I thought it was actually not finally, I have two bits. And you can comment on the last or either. The gliders, mm-hmm. it was a glider chase,
yeah.
and I don't think that works that way. But two, that was the best commercial with the gliders where they also had a chase, and I had the gliders, and I really wish they worked as well as they said they did. But those were rad. I remember wanting that toy real bad and then getting one and then like breaking it very quickly.
I didn't have the glider. There's a lot going on in this episode. One, you really start to dig into the leadership problem that Cobra has between Destro and Cobra Commander, in which who is actually the guy in charge here? Because it's supposed to be Cobra Commander, but Destro seems to be the one running things and doing it better than Cobra Commander. So this is the seeds now you have for future conflict at the top of the organizational chart.
Cobra Commander, by the way, who really leans on the hissing a lot now, which he left later, which is like Princess Leia's English accent at the beginning of Star Wars.
I will say Destro calling Cobra Commander Reptilian Popinjay was a terrific terrific dig.
Made a note of that.
And they had to go have a strategy meeting once they found out that the Joes were countering their strategy, so they had to go have a meeting around a board table with probably really bad PowerPoint.
Is the castle inside a cave?
Yes.
Okay. It's not just surrounded by cliffs and such.
No, I don't think so.
That's a remarkable engineering feat any way you slice it. You got to give them credit.
Well, we talked about it last time. They really spent way too much money on infrastructure when they could have been using that towards weapons and things that would have actually... Look how big that slave pit arena was.
Oh, yeah.
And there was like 100,000 soldiers watching that.
Right. So they got all those. They need supply lines. They need food, plumbing. I mean, it's not nothing. Here's the thing. I suspect the animators know very little about how tanks and tank treads work. He drops in the hiss tank out of nowhere, which is good for him. Then it burns out. Tank's really not good at burning out. Jumps, lands with no apparent suspension, didn't kill Duke.
Well, those hiss tanks in the last week's episode, one shot, they blew up. So they're not very well made.
They're okay with blunt force impacts on the bottom, apparently.
They spent all their engineering time and energy on the bottom.
Did you ever have a toy hiss tank?
No, I had the Joe tank.
The Mobat.
And I had the motorcycle that Stalker drives in the last episode with the Gatling gun attached to the side.
Yep, I had that.
That was
so
the
hiss
one.
Tank was front heavy, and the toy would continually fall forward.
So it worked perfectly then, because that's what happens basically in the cartoon.
Yeah.
Also, not understanding tank physics is not understanding how radiation works. So the best sequence is when the mission, they go out into the Arctic to get the radioactive material, and Snowjob is sort of leading that with Scarlet. I liked how they talk about how cold it was and how it was too cold even for Snowjob, and then Scarlet very dramatically removes her jacket for the mission, as if it's not cold anymore. And then they go in, and they're like, they're not in any kind of protective gear because they're going to go gather radioactive materials. And then Snake Eyes is left to sort of die like Spock in the Wrath of Khan. He's just glowing red. And I feel like even though Chernobyl hadn't happened yet, we probably still knew radiation was bad.
You know, maybe it was like smoking. They just thought he's got a red glow, but he's fine. It's a healthy red glow.
It's like a tan.
That guy's kind of started to come into his own in this episode.
He got more to do. He definitely got more to do. He took out the robots.
He had a feeling.
Yeah.
It would, like, I think Scarlet referred to him sort of like he was a dog. Like,
Sixth Sense.
Oh, Snake Eyes senses something is wrong.
Tripwire used his universal scanner, which is not just for minds, I guess. Mm-hmm. He was, no life forms. He's got like a tricorder attached to that stick. Joes we were introduced to in this episode, Doc, Cover Girl, Tripwire, Snowjob, and I figured out from the last week when we couldn't figure out who that blonde Joe was, that's Steeler.
Oh, okay. Steeler came in the Mobat, I believe.
Yeah, he was the tank driver early on.
I noticed that Rock and Roll had a healthy tan.
So my question for to end the conversation is, if you're Scarlet, how pissed off are you? If you're nominally Duke's love interest, and he gets saved by the Joes, and he gets awoken, and the first thing he says is, "Stalker!" when she's standing next to him. And then they ask him what he remembers. He says, "I remember a face. A beautiful face." I mean, you're done at this point, right?
She was foreign. So that automatically...
Why didn't she just leave?
I mean, here's the deal. I think she wants his job. I think she knows that she's probably more competent than he is.
No, Selena, the slave who's helped Duke escape, she had the way out.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Scarlet. I mean, I feel like she's caring for the other people, like the big brute. Like, she needs to be there for them. Or if someone else gets in there, that she's got to show them how to put a Band-Aid under the thing, and then she'll be fine.
Scarlet's clearly the most competent G.I. Joe. We know that. Clearly. In the cartoon, she's clearly the one that does all the work and gets none of the credit. Damien, what are your thoughts on this cartoon, having never watched it as a child?
I thought it was interesting. So Cobra Commander is a totalitarian tyrant making demands of world leaders, making unrealistic demands. That's not realistic at all.
Well, he's an idiot.
I don't think
it's important to know if a Cobra Commander's an idiot.
Right.
But not as dumb as the world leaders who all gather together knowing he has a device that can transport them away so that they can then be kidnapped.
On a small deserted island. But let's not overlook the fact that he got the leaders of the United States and the Soviet Union on a small, unprotected island. That's not nothing, Cobra Commander.
Also,
in the middle of the Cold War.
They transport the entire Soviet army to their slave pit, including their weapons and tanks and missiles, and they just give up. They just lay their guns down and say, yeah, it's warm here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fair enough.
So, Damien, did you enjoy it? Your experience with watching...
Yeah, I'll stick with it.
Slave of the Cobra Definitely. Master.
Yeah, I'll give it a 4 to 5. I'm sticking with it.
Well, I mean, really on part 2.
I'm bummed they don't have the PSAs, which is huge part of it, and how the show got its educational qualification. But Josh is correct. It's only part 2 of 5, so they did 5-part arcs, which was kind of revolutionary for cartoons at the time, where you had a 5-part miniseries every week, basically, every day after school. So we're by no means near, you know, they've got to get the 2 other ingredients to make the mass device, and then they have to defeat Cobra.
The thing is, we frequently refer to the comics where they have to go gather pieces of something as the broadcast energy transmitter theory. But the thing is, the mass device came first.
That's true.
Which is interesting.
Well, I think the cartoon was a little bit better by then. You had Tomax and Zaymot and Spirit, and you had a bunch of other characters.
They had to get the pointy thing, and they had to get the round thing.
Right, and the square one.
And then the box. And the square thing. Yeah. Whereas this, they got to get the green stuff,
the blue,
the red water, and the blue stuff. And I think there's at least one more. I think they do this with Serpentor.
They like it. It's a good gag. They need to transport Snake Eyes into Cobra's headquarters and just have them walk around, and eventually they'll just get cancer.
That's a good point.
That's all they need to do.
Good point.
All right, so that's G.I. Joe Corner. We'll be back tomorrow. Not tomorrow. That's unfortunate.
No.
We'll be back next week for part 3 of The Mass Device. Stay tuned. I do like the bumpers that are there. They kept the bumpers in, but they didn't keep the PSAs in. Oh, one last thing. I really like the sound effect that they use for when people fall down. It's the same sound effect every time, and it's just a great classic cartoon sound effect.
Now I'm going to have to go back and listen to it.
Let's do some audience questions, even though we're running long. Let's do a question from Ethan J., who says, "I've been thinking about this for the past 4 hours. I know that may not seem like a lot, but I figure we're all aging a year every week right now, so that's the equivalent of almost 9 days.
True.
My teenager doesn't get why I love Captain America. Her only exposure to him is the movies, which we love, and Winter Soldier is her favorite, but she sees Cap as boring and uninteresting next to Downey's Iron Man. What can I give her to read that will show her how great he is, the essence of Cap? She reads a lot of comics, mostly for the writing, and her faves are The Wicked and the Divine, Ultimate Spider-Man, Fraction and Ajaz Hawkeye, Sandman, and Hickman's X-Men. P.S. Don't say Kirby. There's no way she's going to get through that. P.S.S. She hasn't read Brubaker, and maybe that's the answer, but I feel like she already knows that story of Bucky, and I only have that one shot to get this right.
Ethan, I'm gonna go ahead on a limb here. I think you need to give this one up. Because... you know, just because you like a thing, I'm making a lot of assumptions here, but if you're going to show your daughter the Avengers movie where he's charming and funny and good looking, and she doesn't like that,
right?
I don't think you have much of a shot. Can you think of a better story?
No, Connor, I mean, there's great comics, but you're right. I mean, the pinnacle of Cap love is the movies for a lot of, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Who's better than Chris Evans as Cap? No one.
Uninteresting next to Downey's Iron Man. That dude just keeps getting creepier and creepier in every movie. Like, he's tweaking on something. He's not okay. Like,
but he's funny and charming.
He is. I mean, sort of in that way. Like, but if you were like in a car with him for a long time,
oh sure,
he'd be like, please shut up and just listen to the radio for a little bit, you know. And Cap would do that. But he would know that. You wouldn't even have to tell him.
What are your thoughts on Cap, Damien?
So this person says, my teenager doesn't get why they love Captain America. I had a thing here I want to talk about. When you were reviewing Captain America, Josh said, does the killing of Osama bin Laden make Captain America more appealing? And I feel like as a teenager, you're too old. You're past that point. You weren't there when Osama bin Laden was killed. So I feel like that's a lot of the appeal to Captain America for a lot of older people.
Interesting.
I think to me, I mean, like, it's almost like, Ethan, if you were to distill what it is that you like about the character, then you could then say, well, is this the thing that she's going to find interesting? Because right away, if she thinks that Winter Soldier is way better than Cap, I think you're sunk. I think you're done.
I think he's saying the movie is her favorite.
Right. But I mean, but for the most part, the movie versions mirror, I think, the comic version.
Yeah, you know, I think she's saying he's not the character Winter Soldier, but the movie Winter Soldier is her favorite. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Well, either way. I mean, like, think about what it is you like about that. Like, I can tell you what I like about him is that, like, he's a person who says what he means and means what he says, and he wants to do the right thing, and he's not perfect, but he's a person who you can depend on. He'd be the best friend that you ever had. He'd be, you know, he'd pick you up from the airport. He, you know, isn't concerned about little things. Like, he's, you know, he's sincere. He's, you know, like, the best version of a person. Right. I think that is what I like about him. He's somebody who, you know, you would want to have as a friend or a brother or a father, and also who you could, you know, want to be like. Like, it's the platonic ideal of sort of like, in this instance, it's like sort of being a man who's doing the right things and protecting people, you know, and you know, just trying to be good.
He stands by his ideals no matter what the consequences to himself personally. So, I mean, the speech from Civil War that they use in the movies, sort of, where, you know, if everyone else is telling you you're wrong, but you know, you've got, your job is to stand there and take it. Like, that's a really bad bastardization of the speech, but that's the gist of the speech, and that's what sort of encapsulates Cap's ideals, which makes him special.
It's like, he, you know, it's the same thing in the beginning of the, when he's getting beaten up by people,
yeah,
and he doesn't, there's nothing he can do about it, but he can stand there and take it all day because he's not giving in to the things that are wrong. And I mean, for me, God forbid we have people like that in charge.
It's tough. First of all, I don't know if you can convince a teenager of anything, but I don't know if you can convince a teenager that anything's cool.
I mean, if you've gotten her to read all that stuff, take it.
Yeah. I mean, give her Brubaker's Run. Even though they use that as a influence for the movies, it's not the movie story. It's very different. Give her that run. I would say
nothing since then.
Civil War is where that speech happens, and there, you know, as many problems as that series has, Cap's great in that series. It's tough because I can think of, like, well, you know, I grew up loving Cap's, you know, the Gruenwald stuff, but I'm not going to tell you to give her 1980s Captain America comics.
Yeah,
it's tough because it's almost like you have to read a lot of Marvel comics to fully understand his importance in the Marvel universe and why he's such a great character. Yeah. Definitely not the Ultimate books.
No, definitely not.
Give her the Brubaker's Run and see what she thinks.
You know what's interesting is that there's, and we don't have time for this, but there's a lot of comics out there that are Superman analogs. Lots of people have done their sort of Superman story. There's not a lot of Captain America analogs in that same.
Well, there are, like, the Shield, and there's, like, Archie has some. There was a bunch that came out there in World War II.
Very little that are done, like, you know, now, when people want to explore the nature of these, they'll do sort of their dark Superman story or this whatever. And, you know, I tend to think of Captain America as the Marvel version of Superman, meaning the sort of apex of all the stuff. And there's not really a lot of exploration of that. Anyway.
It's also could be something that you may not come to until you're older, and sort of there are things about Captain America that become appealing the older you get.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's something about dudes like me and Connor who keep reading about World War II and all that stuff. And, you know, maybe not everyone has that.
There's also, I mean, there's the Mark Waid trade, Operation Rebirth. Those feature really good Captain America stories. I mean, I can tell you good Captain America stories. I just don't know that they're going to be the ones that are going to make her realize how cool he is.
Yep.
You know? Anytime he rebels against the government is a good Captain America story, because that's what he stands for. I don't know what to tell you. I think you're in a great position. She's reading great comics and watching the movies. Like, she may not love them exactly the way you do, or love the same characters the way you do, but it's like when your kid, you know, roots against your dad's baseball team or something. It's just, sometimes that's the way it goes.
It's also the natural thing.
So We've talked about it before with our email, where at the, we come to the end of the year, and anything we haven't answered, we put into a folder and just start fresh for the new year. And so I went back and grabbed a random email out from 2012 from the mail vault. Vicious Smith, who was one of our regular emailers back then, wrote in 2012 and said, "If Darkseid is indeed the villain of the Justice League movie, how confused are the mainstream audiences going to be when there's another big, muscular, squarish-faced, universe-threatening villain fighting superheroes? Also, I can just imagine people who have never heard of Darkseid claiming that DC ripped off Marvel when they see the guy come on the screen. Oh, boy. Good news, Vicious. Not going to happen."
Nope.
That is what would have happened.
Yes.
And they certainly seem like they were leading up to it.
Yes, they were.
But I don't think you got to worry about that.
Good news. The biggest problem with the Justice League movie wasn't Darkseid and confusing him with Thanos, but the inability of Warner Brothers to put together a cohesive movie universe or entertaining Justice League movie.
Which is weird, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, it feels like, how do you get, it's like, how do you get pizza wrong?
They rushed. They brought the pizza out too early.
Well, that, and they had a bunch of people going, put banana peppers on that. Oh, okay. Well, I don't think we should. No, put a mushroom, but just one over there.
Yeah.
And then like they mix some whole wheat crust in with the rest of the dough, and then somebody wanted it to be thin crust, but the other guy likes New York style, and they couldn't figure out the oven temperature, and then like they just had to serve it, and it was.
Whereas Marvel has one guy making the pizza,
and it turns out he's great at pizza.
That's the difference. There's a single creative vision behind Marvel movies. Say what you will about them. People complain they're too similar, whatever, but there's one guy making the decisions, whereas Warner Brothers is like the encapsulation of movie making by committee, and it's just a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest problem.
Well, we solved that. If only they would hire us to fix it. What a thankless, awful job, just for the record.
contact@ifanboy.com is where you can write in, and we might pull some more old emails out. We may be dedicating more time to emails going forward until everything returns to normal.
We keep saying that. But then we get here, and I'm like, we don't have time for this. And then you do it anyway. And I'm like, that's fine. I'll just lose my job.
So let's wrap the show up before Josh gets fired.
I agree with that. So, like we said, today we talked about Batgirl Year One, where we just did Robin Year One. The book Explode that we did recently is out there. And I have a, is it a mea culpa? I believe.
No.
I feel bad. I had a Talksplode all ready to go this week. Did the interview. I'm even going to break my rule. I had a very long and interesting conversation with Kelly Thompson, a Marvel Comics writer. And if you'd like to hear that with just her audio, I guess that's possible. But I had a technical glitch, and this is the first time that it ever happened to me. And I felt terrible about it because I really liked her and we had a great conversation. It was fun. We are going to do it again. I'm going to wait a little bit so it's not super awkward, but that is going to come up. She's down. She's really cool. And that will come along later. Not too later.
I bet there is an audience out there that would enjoy listening to an interview without your voice in it.
I can walk right now.
So you can, yeah, that will happen. It'll come out again. They're going to reconvene and do that over again, but it may be a little while longer. But in the meantime, there is going to be a media explode, as we mentioned earlier. We're going to do a second episode this month, so you'll get that this month. As we said, by the end of the year, there will be 6 talk explodes and 6 book explodes. Would they all come out exactly on schedule? We'll figure that out. But there'll be a media explode this month. You can check that out. And Damien has a podcast. Tell the people about your podcast.
So my podcast is called Can I Say Something? It's me and 3 buddies from high school. Sit around and talk about the movies we've been watching, food we've been eating. We do top fives. We play some games. It's on all of the platforms. It's on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you get your podcasts.
How long have you been doing that?
Just about over a year.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
What have you learned?
I just started doing
interviews. I can't help it.
This is really, really hard. Was part of the reason I donated. One of the reasons I was Patreoned already. So starting my own podcast definitely taught me how difficult the job that you guys have is. Yeah.
Thank you. It's, you know, it's like I don't feel like it's hard, but I feel like it takes a lot of time and practice and to sort of get to a point where you're comfortable with it. But also, it just takes a lot of time. It's just a lot of time.
So check out Can I Say Something? That's Damien's podcast, available wherever podcasts are sold.
You may. Do you say that in the show? You just...
I do, yep.
Yeah.
when I go on a rant, I say like, can I say something? It's sort of that sort of thing.
I see.
It's a good hook.
Yes.
So like when Dennis Miller would say, I don't want to get off on a rant here.
Yes.
Exactly.
And then he would turn into a horrible monster. Don't do that.
head over to iFanboy.com. You can find all of our shows. That's where you can find out where the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And who knows what the pick of the week is going to be moving forward, but it'll be there.
Pick something.
You can also find out by liking Facebook.com/iFanboy, following us at iFanboy on Twitter, and following at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. Best Legion Panels is obviously on hiatus at the moment. Don't know what's going to happen there either. But in the meantime, individually, we are C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram, Jay Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram. And Damien, where can people find you online?
Sure. It's B-I-S-I-C-K-L-E at Bicycle on Twitter.
Cool.
Excellent work. So you know what the pick of the week is going to be next week? It's going to be a nap. That's what I'm going to say.
Pick of the week is
nap. We just take like 20 minutes of silence. Maybe we'll play some calming music and then you come back.
Some ASMR podcast.
Yeah, there you go. If you like this show, you like any show, anything you can do to help any of the shows that you're listening to that are helping you get through this, make sure you leave reviews for them. Make sure that you support them. Make sure you leave ratings for them wherever they're going and tell people about them. Not just ours, just anybody who you can get to, because I think that it's helping a lot now. Ironically, I haven't had a lot of time to listen to podcasts for because I'm very busy with all this stuff now and I don't drive around anymore. So that's a thing. But if you do, if they're getting you through, make sure that you're telling people about it or doing whatever you can to help those shows stick around. In ours, too, if you want that. And that's our show today. Damien, how much regret do you have right now?
Absolutely none. You guys are a goddamn American treasure.
Well that's not
that
true.
That really means something, though, when you say that. Like, that's right. You just throw that around.
We thank you again. We could not...
Yes.
Believe it when we saw the donation. Hopefully you had fun and enjoyed your time. Yeah. Thanks for coming on and dealing with all this nonsense in the middle of all this craziness. I know we talked about you skipping because you wouldn't be on a regular show, and some people mentioned it in the Facebook Patreon page that they felt bad for you because you weren't going to get on a regular show, but hopefully this was fun and it wasn't a disappointment.
That was a lot of fun seeing how the sausage was made.
Don't tell anyone how chaotic nightmare it is.
And it was fun. And listen, you didn't suck, because we got to worry about stuff like that. And you don't need to worry about it. You didn't suck. It was fun, and we were glad to have you on.
Thank you. It was fun being here.
Cool. Right.
Well, until next time, everyone stay safe. Wash your hands. I'm Connor.
Josh, say your name.
I'm Damien.
There it
I'm
is.
Damien.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
You just call on me, brother. When you need a hand, we all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.